Sukkadaf Mem Hey, we're Mem Dalman Bay's weight line from the bottom. Since the beginning of the fourth parak, we have been predominantly discussing the mitzvah of Arava. Arava is a halakha l'moshe Mesinai, that on Sukkos. So we are going to be doing, in addition to the mitzvah of Dalaminim, so we're also going to do in the Beis Hamikdash a mitzvah of Arava. What exactly is the mitzvah of Arava? So that has been the discussion of the Gemara since the beginning of the parak. Certainly what we know is that there is an idea that when you go into the Beis Hamikdash on the 7 days of Sukkos, so we're going to be taking a Rava, and we're going to be doing one of two things, either Netila, either we're going to be shaking it like we do with the Dal Minim, or we're going to do Zakifa, we're going to rest it, lean it onto the Mizbeach. Machlokas Amarim, exactly how this mitzvah is going to be performed. We also saw earlier in this parak, Machlokas between Tanakhama and Abishal in terms of where is the source of this mitzvah of Arava. According to Abishal, we're darshing it from the Pesukim, and according to the Chachamim, it is simply Halacha Moshe Mesinai. In addition to that, there also is an extension of this mitzvah of Arava that is done Bigvulin as well. A Takana of the Nevi'im, that not only is this mitzvah going to be performed in the Beis HaMikdash, but outside the Beis HaMikdash, there's also a Takana that we're going to do some version, some form of the mitzvah of Arava. In the yesterday's daf, the Gemara brought down one of two positions in terms of how exactly to articulate this practice. It's either a Yisod HaNevi'im or Minig Nevi'im. The Gemara attributes it, Rashi attributes in yesterday's daf to Chagai Zechariah Malachi, the last of the Nevi'im of Klal Yisrael. They're members of the Anshe Knesset HaGedola at the beginning of Aishin, the beginning of the Second Temple. And they institute this practice of doing some form of Arava outside of the Beis HaMikdash. It's either going to be a Yisod or a Minag Nevi'im. If it's a Yisod Nevi'im, so that means that it's a formal institution that was instituted by the Nevi'im. If it's Minag Nevi'im, it's just simply a practice that was started by the Nevi'im, but it wasn't formally instituted. The difference between the two of them is going to be whether or not we make a bracha. If it's a Yisod Nevi'im, then we are going to make a bracha. If it's Minag Nevi'im, then we're not going to make a bracha. That is the way Rashi presents it. That's the simple pshat of the Gemara. And there was a lengthy tosis that we did not do yesterday, but at least I made reference to it yesterday on Mandala Mudbase in terms of the propriety of making a bracha on something which is only a minug. The Gemara brought down the story regarding Aibu, where Aibu took the Arava. Obviously, Aibu is living now well after Churban Beis HaMikdash, so the idea that he's taking Arava, he's doing the mitzvah of Arava. So as we learned in yesterday's daf, it's only on the seventh day of Sukkot that there is an institution of Arava. And on top of that, exactly what to do with it. So the Gemara tells us that he was chovet and that he did not make a bracha. Now, exactly what does that mean? He was chovet. So Rashi says that he did not know and he shook the arava. And on top of that, he didn't make a bracha because he was of the position that it was minig nevi'im and not yisod ha-nevi'im. The Gemara then told a couple of other stories regarding Aibu. The second one we went through yesterday, that was regarding the question of doing work during the Shemitah year, not in order to improve the tree, but just simply to preserve the tree. And the conclusion of the Gemara was is that if it's just the work to preserve the tree, so then that would be fine during the Shemitah year. It is only the type of avoda which actually improves the tree. So that's the kind of avoda that's usher during the Shemitah year. With that stated, we continue where we left off yesterday. Amar Aibu. We're 8 lines from the bottom of Memdal Mid Beis. Amar Aibu, Mishim Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok. Al Yalech Adam Ba'arvish Abbasis Yosem Megimel Parsos. Person should not be traveling on Friday more than 3 Parsos. Now the reason why this is going to become articulate in the Gemara in just a moment is because when you're traveling at such a long way, and remember we're talking at a time when there was no means of communication, so that means that by definition you're going to come unexpected. The surprise visit home right before Shabbos will probably mean, not probably, but definitely will mean that they did not prepare for you as you were arriving. As a result of that, you're going to be entering into your house where they did not expect you coming in, and they did not prepare for you for the Shabbos. As Rashi points out, it's going to lead to a argument. So best thing to do is to avoid this kind of situation altogether. Again, starting from the Gemara, Amar Aibu, Mishum Rabbi Lazar B'Rabbi Tzadok, a person should not be traveling on 3 parsos on Shabbos to get home. I'm Rav Kahana, lo amar na lebe say. Rav Kahana says that's true when he in fact is going home. Aval le'ushpizi, but let's say he's going to a hotel. Amai denaket samech. Whatever he's taking with him, that's what he's going to be samech on. Meaning he's not expecting the owner of the hotel to provide him food. And so therefore, there is not going to be any fighting going on, because the only thing that he is going to, the only thing that he's going to be eating is that which he brings with him, and he's not expecting the innkeeper to have prepared food for him. Now, in a slightly different version, Rav Kahana says that even when you're going home, it's going to be a problem. Meaning, in the second version, so not only when you're going to a hotel where they're not going to have any food for you, but even when you're going home, still, it's something that you should be concerned about, because they're simply not going to be prepared for you. And again, it's going to lead to a fight. Rav Kahana tells us in an episode that it happened to him, where he came home on Shabbos unexpected, was traveling more than three parsels. The afilu kasa daharsana lo vishkachi, did not even find kasa daharsana, a little bit of fried fish. Rashi says this is a term the Gemara uses to describe a small meal. Mitzvah lulav ketzad. Two lines from the bottom. The Gemara now goes back to the Mishnah. So Tana Tana came to Rav Nachman. The following verse was taught from Rav Nachman. Sojan agag ha'itztaba. In preparation for Shabbos, so the lulav was brought to the Azara. And where was it stored? So the Mishnah didn't say, but here the Brisa gives a little bit more clarification in terms of where it's going to be stored. The Brisa says that it's stored on the Gag HaItztaba, literally the roof of the of one of the pillars of the Azara. Amar Leh, as we turn to the top of Memhamud Aleph, V'chi Liyavshan Hutzarech, I don't understand. Where are you going to dry it out over there if it's standing there on the top of the roof? Ela'ema al Gav HaItztaba. So the Gemara says, okay, clarification over here, and a small editing of the Braisa. It's going on the bench. The Gemara tells us that in terms of the construction, the configuration of the Harabais, so it was double layered, it was double rung. It had a set of pillars followed by another set of pillars. Picture over here would be worth more than any description I can give. So certainly I would encourage you, if you have any kind of pictures in which you could look at, to see it. But anyway, as far as the editing of the Gemara is concerned, the editing of the Braisa, so the lulav wasn't placed on the rooftop because it would just simply dry out over there. It was actually placed underneath in the shade so that it would not dry out. We start with the Mishnah. When Mem Hamad Aleph, we are continuing now in the Mishnah. The Mishnah continues with the Mitzvah of Arava. Mitzvah Arava Ketza Makam Hayilamatim Yishalayim Nikra Motza. So there was a place right below Yerushalayim. The name of the place was called Motza. Yard and Lashan, they would go down there. Umalakta Misham, Murbiyo Shal Arava. And it's there they would clip these really long Aravas. Ubay Vizoknaso Bitside HaMizbech. And what they would do, it was they placed them right by the side of the Mizbech. V'Hashem Kfufim Agabe Mizbech. The heads of these Aravas would go over the Mizbech. These Aravas were so long that they were actually were resting next to the Mizbech. And ultimately, the tops of them went over the Mizbech. In just a couple of minutes from now, we're going to be going over the actual dimensions of the Mizbech to describe in quantitative terms how long these Aravas were. Suffice to say, they were really long. Tiku ve'eru v'tiku. They blew on shofar. Rashi Tosfos to say that this is a moment of simcha. And so at a time of simcha, so it is appropriate now to blow on shofar, and that's what they did. Now every day they would encircle the Mizbech one time. What would they be carrying while encircling the Mizbech? So hopefully you remember the Gemara in Daf Mem Gimel. The Gemara had a machlokas amarayim, exactly what they would be holding. It really is dependent on how to understand the mitzvah of Arava. If the mitzvah of Arava is not new and like we do with the lulav, so then with the Mishnah over here describing as encircling the Mizbech, what they would be holding is they'd be holding the Arava. Because just like the lulav would be done through Na'anuin, so to the Arava would also be done with Na'anuin. So that is certainly one way to understand the Mishnah. However, the Gemara pointed out that the other way to understand the Mishnah, back on Mem Gimel, is that what they would be holding is they'd be holding the lulav. What about the Arava? The Arava, the mitzvah is bezikifa. The only mitzvah regarding the Arava is just simply lean it against the Mizbeach. And there's no mitzvah to hold nor shake the Arava. So the Gemara back on Mem Gimel brought down two different ways to understand our Mishnah over here. According to the Tanakhama, while encircling the Mizbech, they would be saying the Psukim of Hala, of Tehillim. Rav Yehuda Amir, Ani Vaho Hoshiana. And Rav Yehuda said that the formulation and what they would say as they were going around is Ani Vaho Hoshiana. Ani Vaho, says Rashi, are Shemus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Strongly encourage you to go through Rashi. Rashi says that these are Shemus Hashem that come out of Psukim. Rashi over here, somewhat in a uncharacteristic turn of events, goes through some of the more esoteric understanding of how to extract the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu based on various psukim. Anyway, just to make this Rashi a lot shorter and a lot simpler, so both the words Ani and Vaho are Shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why specifically those? So probably an understanding that goes well beyond my pay grade. Vaoso Yom HaKifin and Mizbech Shevapim. Now on that day, meaning the seventh day, what we call Hoshana Rabbah, they were encircled Mizbech seven times. V'shas Petir Samayin Omrim. Now, as they are finishing up on the seventh day, and this is now the last time they're going to be doing Hakafas on Hoshana Rabbah, on Sukkos altogether, so there would be a tefillah upon the conclusion of the mitzvah. What would that tefillah sound like? So the Mishnah over here gives us a couple of nuschaos. Yofel lecha mizbech, yofel lecha mizbech, according to the Tanakhama, praise to the mizbech. Rabbi Lazar Omer, lahashem u lecha mizbech, lahashem lecha mizbech. Rabbi Lazar had a slightly different formulation. The Gemara, at the end of today's daf, is going to wonder that that formulation of Rabbi Lazar seems a little bit problematic. We're going to come back, we're going to understand that in the context of the Gemara. Kamaseh b'chol kach maseh b'shabbos. Now, as far as the mitzvah of Rav is concerned, it was done for all 7 days during Sukkos, and regardless of whether it was a weekday or a Shabbos. Elishayu malakten oso me'erev v'manichen oso begigyo shel zahav. One noticeable difference between weekday and Shabbos, and that is that on Shabbos they would not clip the Aravos on Shabbos. In fact, obviously it would be a malacha on Shabbos to clip the Aravos. They would clip it before Shabbos. They would put it in golden tubes. Kedei shelo yichmoshu, so that it doesn't dry up. Rav Yochanan Mebroko Omer, Chariyo Shel Deko, Hayu Mivin V'choftin Oso Bekarka. According to Rav Yochanan Mebroko, it would not be the Aravos that they would be using, but rather Chariyo Shel Deko, they would use the palms of a palm tree, the fronds of a palm tree. And they would bring them, and they would be Chovet Oto Bekarka, they would bang them on the ground. B'tzidei HaMizbech, on the side of the Mizbech. It certainly sounds like, according to Rav Yochanan Mebroko, that the mitzvah altogether was not with Avarava, but the mitzvah altogether was with Lulavim. Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to give a couple of explanations of why that should be. V'oso yom nikra chavad charyos. That day, it was described as chavad charyos. The Mishnah then gives a couple of minhagim that occurred on this day. Presumably, the Mishnah is still continuing to discuss what happens now on the seventh day of Hoshana Rabbah. So miyat tenoka shomtim es lulavim. Adults would go over to children and would take the lulavim right out of their hands. Now, so obviously it sounds like a really strange minhag, and they were not talking about their own children. They were just talking about, generally speaking, children who were walking around with lulavim in their hands. So adults would come and would take it from the children. Now, under normal circumstances, you can't do that. Now, even though technically speaking, the children are not in ownership of the lulavim, but still, there is a rabbinic ban to go ahead and to take something from a child. This is what's called darchei shalom. Obviously, if you go and start taking things from other people, even if it's from children who don't technically own the item, nevertheless, you can only imagine that the parent of that child is going to be really upset, and it's going to lead to fighting. So as a way to keep the peace, what's called in halacha, darchei shalom, so the Chachamim said that such activity is going to be banned. Albeit it's an issur derabbanan, but still it's an issur derabbanan. On Hoshana Rabbah, and we'll discuss a little bit later on why it is, but on Hoshana Rabbah, so this behavior was, now I don't want to say it was encouraged, but it was acknowledged. And in addition to that, the Mishnah also points out another minhag, and that is the adults would take the esrogim from the children and take it from them and eat it. Again, it's the seventh day, and there's no longer a need for the esrogim. And once again, the idea that they would take it from the children, so that we're going to be discussing also in slightly more detail in terms of the propriety of such an act. Again, under normal circumstances, you would not be allowed. And Hoshana Rabbah, the base of Mikdash, it was a minhag that was, again, I don't want to say encouraged, but certainly acknowledged. The Gemara is going to hit on that first detail that we learned in the Mishnah, and that is for the mitzvah of Arava, so when they would go to a place called Motza. Tana, we learned in the Braisa, Makum Kanalia Hava. So the name of the place was Kanalia. And the idea over here is, says Rashi, is that the location was duty-free. There were no taxes whatsoever in this place. Don't know why. Rashi does not give an explanation in terms of why. But they would go ahead and they would collect the aravos from a place that was free of taxes. V'tani damai tama karile motza. Now the Braisa's labeling of the place called Kanaya and the Mishnah's labeling of the place motza, it's one and the same. The Gemara now wants to understand why our Mishnah calls it motza. So I did the ma'apik mikarga damaka karile motza because it is exited. The word motza means exited. And over here, exited meaning that it is exited the general rules of the government. General rules of the government is that there's some sort of tax that's collected on sales. Sounds like we're talking about some sort of sales tax, but over here, for whatever reason, when the aravos are collected from this location, so there is no taxation, there's no collection whatsoever for these places. Two dots, a little bit more than halfway down in Mem Hamad Aleph. Uvayim bezokfen osa betzide. Tana rabos varukos v'gvos echad asar amma. So as far as the length of the arava, the total length of the arava was 11 amas. Kideshi ugochos ala mizbech amma. So that it would go over the side of the mizbech on the very top by one amma. Amma mereimar. Mishum mar zirchosh mamina ala yisod manach lehu. And now the Gemara actually crunches the numbers. And what it comes out now is that the bottom of the aravos are not going to be on the ground next to the mizbech, but rather on the yisod. Because if you think it's going to be actually on the ground, michti. The Gemara says, well, that's going to be impossible. Allah amma bekanas amma zeh yisod. Allah chamish bekanas amma zeh usobiv. Allah shalsh zeh umakam hakranos. So the Gemara over here gives us a crash course in the configuration of the mizbech. Let me explain this outside in just a couple of minutes, and then we're going to be able to plug it into the Gemara. The foundation of the Mizbech is made up of a block of 32 by 32 in terms of length and width. In terms of a height, it was one amma high. That was the very foundation of the Mizbech. Above that, you had a Sovev. It was 30 by 30 in length and width, which means obviously that it went interior one amma on each side, and it went a height of five ammas. In addition to that, you had on top of that another block. That block was 28 amas by 28 amas, and that went up 3 amas high. Now, it's true that in each one of the corners you had a keren, you had a, literally translated as a horn, but basically you had a block in each one of the corners, but for our purposes right now, we can ignore the chronos, as they don't play into our discussion. Now, the Gemara points out over here as follows. Let's just for a moment imagine that the bottom of these aravos, now these aravos are really long, just to give us all a visualization of how long we're talking about. So the Mizbech is 9 amas up in the air. Just for the sake of giving out round numbers, let's say that every amas is 2 feet. Not precise, but just for the purposes of illustration. So that means that the total height of the Mizbech from the ground going up, the vertical height, is going to be 18 feet. Okay, just to give you a sense, it's about 2 stories high. Anyway, if the bottom of the Arava was on the ground, right next to the Mizbech, and we're leaning it over, so it's going to go up 9 amas. Now, that's true, but that's inaccurate. It's not going to go up 9 amas. It's actually going to go up more. Because the vertical height is 9 amas, which means, of course, that the hypotenuse is going to be more than 9 amas. The Gemara's assumption over here is that if I lean it onto the side of the Mizbech, where the bottom is going to be hitting the floor, there is no way that the hypotenuse allows the arava to go and extend over the side of the mizbech, the side of the top of the mizbech, by one amma. The Gemara's assumption is that it's just not going to make it. And remember that we had, as part of our Mesorah, that it went a full amma over the mizbech, and the total height of each one of the aravas was 11 ammas. So that means to say that you were talking only about 10 ammas of area being covered. And the Gemara just simply assumes that there is no way that the Arava can be on the bottom of the ground, going up, and that hypotenuse is for sure not going to allow the Arava to go, not only hit the top of the Mizbech, but go over it by a full Amma, if we're talking about the hypotenuse, which of course we're talking about. Therefore, the Gemara concludes that it must be that the bottom of the Arava is on the Yesod HaMizbech, giving it already one amma above ground, and also giving it the ability to go a little bit further interior. So it cuts down also on the hypotenuse as well. So the Gemara therefore concludes that Shema Minah, it must be. This is the way it's got to be configured in order so that we can put these numbers all together. Amar Rabbi Abba, continuing in the Gemara, 5 lines from the bottom. My crush in Amr Yisru Chag Bavusim Ad Karnas Mizbech. Pasuk in Halo, which admittedly is a difficult pasuk to translate. The Gemara over here is not going to give one, not two, but 3 different explanations of what the pasuk could possibly mean. Number 1. Yisru Chag Bavusim Ad Karnas Mizbech. Amr I'm sorry. That already goes back to explanation number one, which is that isru from the word la'asur, to tie up. And the idea over here is that the arava is going to be tied up with together with the mizbech, ad the karnos mizbech, all the way up to the kronos. Meaning basically, based on the visual that we just gave, if you can just imagine and picture in your mind now the arava going and filling up the entire side of the mizbech. And you have all the sides of the mizbech filled with aravos. So now you understand that as David is, now I'll say he's seeing it. It's not, he's not actually seeing it. There's no Beis HaMikdash built in his day. The Beis HaMikdash was only built after next generation by Shlomo HaMelech. But still, the point is that if you could just as he's imagining the Beis HaMikdash, so that is what he's doing in this pasuk. He's describing Isru Chag Bavosim Ad Karnos HaMizbech. That on the Yantav where it is tied up, meaning the Mizbeach is tied up with all these Aravos, so it's going all the way up to the Kronos. That's one possible pshat in the Pasuk. Gemara offers a couple more. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Kol Anot Alula Ba'aguda Ba'hadas Ba'avosim Ha'ala Alav HaKasuf Ki Ilu Ban HaMizbeach V'Ikriv Alav Karbon. If you properly take your Lulav and your Hadasim, Kadosh Baruch Hu treats you as if you were building the base of Mikdash, you were building the Mizbeach, and you offered Karbonos on top of it. Shenemar. Now the Gemara quotes the pasuk Isru Chag Bavosim Ad Karnosim Mizbech. The understand over here is Isru from the word to tie up. The reference over here is to the lulav. The lulav is going to be bound up. It's going to be tied up like we learned earlier in the perek. And Be'avosim together with the hadasim, which are avos, which are braided. And if you do so, it'll be Ad Karnos. It's going to be like we are actually working with the Mizbeach, meaning to say that it's as if we're actually bringing Karbonos. The Gemara is going to be bringing a third interpretation of what is meant over here. I'm Rav Yirmiyah Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochav, Rav Yochav Mishum Rabbi Shimon HaMechuzi Mishum Rabbi Yochanan HaMakusi. Kol Ha'osa Iso L'chag Ba'achila V'shtiyah. If you bind up Yontav together with eating and drinking, meaning you prepare good food and drink on Yontav, Ma'ala Lava Kasav Ki Ilu Bana Mizbeach, the Torah treats you as if you built the Mizbech Vikr of Alav Karban. In other words, you are fulfilling to the best of our ability the mitzvah of Simchas Yantav. And it's as if we offer Karbanos Yantav. Shenem Reitzur Chag Ba'avosim Ad Karnos Mizbech. That is going to be a third interpretation of the Pasuk in Halal. Amar Chizkam Revir Mi Mishim Rashbi Kol Mitzvos Kolan Ein Adam Yotze Bahem Ela Derech Yedei Lasam. When it comes to mitzvos, so the person is only going to fulfill his obligation only if he's holding them in the way they grow. Derech Gedei Lasan. Now, he says kol mitzvos, he's talking about all the mitzvos. So how many mitzvos is he making reference to over here? So we'll state the obvious and then we'll go even beyond that. So over here, it certainly sounds like, well, let's read the pasuk, and that way we can now start with the obvious. Shenamah, the pasuk says, Atzei Shitim Omdim. So a description of the Karshi HaMishkan, the beams that are going to be encircling the Mishkan. So the Torah describes them as Aseya Shitim Omedim. Omedim means that they have to be up, this side up. The same way that the trees grew, so one has to maintain faithfully the correct side in which goes up, even after the trees are fashioned into wooden beams. And you have to make sure that the side that was growing up still is the side that's going up for the Mishkan. So teaches us Chizkiah in the name of the Rashbi, and he says kol mitzvos. Now kol mitzvos means obviously not just for the Karshi HaMishkan, but for other mitzvos as well. You'll recall we did a Tosos not so long ago that dealt with the problem of how to make the bracha on the Dal Minim. The struggle in terms of how to properly make the bracha on the Dal Minim is all predicated on the fact that we know that the bracha has to be made over Lasiyasam. Got to make the bracha immediately prior to your actually doing the mitzvah. But we also learned together that it has to be over Lasiyasam, and it has to be immediately prior, not too much in advance, and certainly not afterwards as well. So Tosfos struggled. Tosfos wanted to know, well, how are we going to do this as it relates to the Dal Minim? We certainly know. The idea is that the mitzvah is accomplished with the Dal Minim the moment that you pick it up. So if the mitzvah is accomplished the moment that you picked it up, so then if you go ahead and you pick it up, so the mitzvah is done, and it's too late to make the bracha. Tosfos also was bothered by the fact, well, why don't we just simply, why don't we make the bracha before we pick it up? So Tosfos says, well, that's too early. All this can be found in Tosfos back on Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. So Tosfos therefore says, so what we have to do is we have to find the sweet spot. What exactly is going to be the point where I'm not exactly having done the mitzvah already, but I am right on the precipice of having of doing the mitzvah. So what is that point? So Tosfos gives three suggestions. One of his three suggestions that we're going over again right now is because of our Gemara over here. Our Gemara over here tells us that if you hold one of the minim upside down, certainly all four of them, but even if I hold one of them upside down, so one has not fulfilled his obligation. Therefore, Tosfos says is that if you take the dal minim but hold them one of them upside down, so on one hand, they are in your hands already, so you are on the threshold of fulfilling the mitzvah, but because one of them is upside down, so you have not yet fulfilled the mitzvah. This is one of three suggestions that Tosfos says in terms of how to properly take the dal minim and at the same time successfully make the bracha over la siyasa. See Tosfos over there for more details in terms of other solutions that he gave. Going back to our Gemara, we are back on Memhamed Beis. The Gemara is going to give a couple of explanations, a couple of other explanations of what the Torah means when it says, "Atzei shitim omdim." Tanya Namiach, the Gemara quotes the Brisa, "Atzei shitim omdim sheomdim derech delasam." So the first shot over here, exactly what, like we just said, that it has to be derech delasam, the same way it grew, the same way it's got to be when you're doing the mitzvah. Davachar omdim shemamidim itzipuyam. Another thing the Gemara says is that it holds up the plating. So we know that the Karshi Mishkan, that the beams that are surrounding the Mishkan, so they are plated with gold. So is the plating that is holding up the wood, or is the wood holding up the plating? So the Gemara Darshan is over here, Atzei shitim omdim, it's the wood that's going to be holding up the plating. Davachar omdim shematomar avat zivram uvatel sikuyam. The Gemara offers a third explanation of the Pasuk, and that is that one would imagine that all hope has been given up. We're going to get back the crush and the boards of the Mishkan. Don't think that they're lost forever. They're going to come back. Now it's interesting that the Gemara over here says that don't give up hope because they're going to come back. Now we're describing over here the boards of the Mishkan, not the boards of the Beis Hamikdash. So it's fair to ask, and a number of people have asked, so why are we so bent on making sure that we get the boards of the Mishkan back? What we're hoping for is the building of the Beis Hamikdash, not the Mishkan. So a number of Achronim have addressed this question, offered answers. We're going to go on. Amri Chizki Amar Rav Yirmiyahu Mishum Rashbi. Yechol Anil Aftoros Kol Ha'olam Kulo Min Adin Miyom Shenivresa Ad Ata. So the Gemara now quotes in the name of the Rashbi. Now, this is not relevant to our discussion, but we just did quote B'Shem Rashbi. So the Gemara now is going to be quoting other limudim that was said over in the name of the Rashbi, and it happens to be exactly in the same in the same Shalshalos, in the same Masorah. It's Chizkiah saying B'Shem Rabbi Yirmiyahu B'Shem Rashbi. Yachlani Liftoros Kol Ha'olam Kulo Min Adin. So what I can do is I can excuse everybody Min Adin. Miyom Shenivresa Ad Ata. From the day that I was born until this moment. Now, if you couple that together with my son, from the moment that the world was created until this point in time. So basically, what the Rashbi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, is saying is that he has zechuyos. Zechuyos that not only are good for him, but are good for Klal Yisrael as well. And not only does he have zechuyos, but his son has zechuyos as well. And he's on that madrega where he totally understands where his chuyos are in terms of how they can help, not just him, but also Klal Yisrael as well. The Marshal over here points to the fact that all those years that he spent in the cave, suffering in the cave, so that just extended and added to his chuyos. Okay. So, V'omale Yosam ben Uziel imanu. Now, if you were to take Yosam ben Uziel, one of the malachim of the Jewish people, and you add him to us, Shenivra Olam Ad Sofa. So we have enough chuyos to add from the time that the world was created all the way until the end of the world. So this idea now that you have extra zechuyos and these extra zechuyos can carry over. So the Gemara says that it's a very Jewish idea. I know it could be understood otherwise, but not only that, but the Rashbi was also able to measure and know exactly how much extra zechuyos he had together with the son, together with Yosam. Curiosity, you're wondering who Yosam is? Take a look at Rashi over here. Yosam, and it was the outside of Yosem Mishar Malachim. So he was a tzaddik, and he was more humble than any other king, says Rashi. V'zachav et kibud aviv. On top of that, he was very involved in the mitzvah of kibud avim. Shakol yamim shaya aviv mitzor, v'hu haya shofet im haaretz kidichsiv. V'yosem shofet lo nato alav keser machus bechayav. While his father was alive, even though his father had tzaras, and his father was not in a position to be the king, but he himself did not, at that point in time, take the throne. Says Rashi, continuing Rashi, v'chol dinim shayudan omra b'shem aviv. Anytime he had any kind of judgment, he never took the credit for himself. He always credited his father for being the source of these halachas. So he was exemplary, not only as a king, but being an anav and in the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. And that's why he was added to this list together with the Rashbi. One more statement said by this particular Baal Memra, Rabbi Chizkia, in the name of Rav Yirmiya, in the name of the Rashbi. And he says, I see many B'nai Aliyah, people who have arrived at certain spiritual heights. There are not that many. If, let's say, there's 1,000, so it's me and my son are two of them. Im me'ahem, if, let's say, there's 100, ani v'anai me'ahem. Me and my son make up two of them. Im shnai me'ahem, and let's say they're just two. Ani uvanai hein. So I'm telling you who they are. They're me and my son. Now, as far as anivus is concerned, as far as humility is concerned, so we've gone over this point a number of times. Humility is just, it is not a lack of proper assessment of one's own behavior or one's own status. In other words, to be an anav, it still gives you the opportunity to know exactly who you are and what level you're at. To be an anav just simply means that even though you know exactly what level you're holding at, you do not make a big deal. Meaning you are a big deal, but you simply do not make a big deal about it. So over here, just because Rashbi recognizes the level of godless that he's at, together with the level of the godless of his son, nevertheless, it does not speak of any kind of lack of anivus. It just simply is a recognition of where they were at. Now the Gemara says, now the number of Bnei Aliyah, the people who are on the certain spiritual heights, so the Gemara says, maybe we're talking about two people. So the Gemara says, really, how did we arrive at such a small number? The Ha'am Rava. Rava has, based on a pasuk in Sefer Yecheskel, Tam Nisrei Alfei Dara Hava. So there are 18,000 to come at Kusha Bricha in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shenemar Saviv Shmona Asar Elef. So over here, understanding a cryptic and esoteric pasuk in Sefer Yecheskel, so the Gemara's understanding is that there's not two, but rather 18,000 of these Bnei Aliyah, people who are operating on a higher spiritual level. Lokasha and the Mistakle Baspaklari Hameira had the lowest Mistakle Baspakla Hameira. So the Gemara's answer is very simple, and that is that we're talking about levels. There are people that are on higher spiritual levels than others. What the Rashbi was counting with those people who were on a higher level, they had what the Gemara here describes as Aspaklaria Hameira. They had a vision, and their vision was clear. On the other hand, the 18,000 that's being described in Sefer Yecheskel, they're operating on a lower level. Aspaklaria she'ina mi'ira. In other words, they are having visions, but it's opaque. And they're not reaching the same spiritual heights as the Rashbi and his son. Udim istakle baspaklaria mi'ira mizuchi kolehad. The Gemara says, still, I can't believe that the number is only two. Two people who are able to see through the haspaklaria hami'ira. The Gemara says, I thought there were more than two. V'hama rabbi lopachos ama mitas v'shisa tzadike de mekable ape shchina b'chol yom. 36 tzaddikim who are able to have a really good vision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a daily basis. Shenemar Ashrei Kol Chochei Lo. The pasuk says, fortunate is the one who seeks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who hopes for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the word Lo, Lamed Vav, B'Gamashia Tasa V'Shisa. Obviously the Gamashia over here being 36. So over here now the Gemara is bothered. Meaning we did segregate 18,000 from those that are above. The 18,000 have a lower quality vision reception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Fine. And we said that the Rashbi and his son belong in a higher quality, but the Gemara is bothered because the Gemara thinks that there shouldn't be just two, but rather it should be 36. To which the Gemara's response, Hada Ailu Bebar, Hada Ailu Below Bar. So the way Rashi understands it is as follows. As far as the Rashbi and his son Rebbe Elazar is concerned, so they're describing going in with permission. They have reshut to go in. They can go in. Oh, I'm sorry. They can go in below bar. Right. I'll say it accurately, like Rashi. Below bar, below reshus, meaning they can go in whenever, whatever time they want. And since they have access to whatever they want, so they are operating even on a higher level. The Lamed Vav Tzaddikim, so they have Aspa Klari Amiria. It's true they have good reception, and it's true that they can meet with the Shechina, but only bibar, only with permission. Only with permission granted are they allowed to go in. So basically now we have three levels of Tzidkus, of people who are operating on a really high level of righteousness. Pasuk Yecheskel describes 18,000 that have some sort of reception, some sort of comprehension of the spiritual heights, but aspeklari she'ena meira, so opaque. Then we have the Lamed Vav Tzaddikim. They have clarity, they have a clear reception, but they can only go and quote unquote have a meeting with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, a rendezvous with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, but only birushos, only with permission. And then there are those like the Rashbi and his son who have that kind of same reception, but they can go in afilu shelo birushos. Goes without saying, but just makes the most obvious comment, and that is my understanding of these Gemaras over here are extraordinarily limited. The only thing I could do is read, translate, say over Rashi, but obviously I'm at a tremendous loss in terms of properly explaining these Gemaras over here. It's an obvious point, but I'll say it anyway. B'shas petira san mahin omrim. It's the end of Hoshana Rabbah, they're leaving the Mizbeach. And so now they would say over a short tefillah as they were leaving. So what was that short tefillah? So the Gemara had two opinions. One was the position of the Tanna Kamma, and the other one was the Shita of Rebbe Elazar. The Gemara over here is going to be bothered by the Shita of Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar's formulation sounds, to say the least, problematic. Go back to the Mishnah. Rebbe Elazar Omer, L'Hashem u'lecha Mizbeach. L'Hashem u'lecha Mizbeach. It was the tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, coupled with the Mizbeach. And this seems to be what is called Shituf, an association between something and the Ribbono Shel Olam, a partnership, if you will, even with the recognition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a senior partner. But as the Gemara is about to point out, there's no partnership. In other words, everything emanates from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not partner with any other type of koach. Suggesting such a thing certainly sounds as close to Avodah Zarah as possible. There is a lengthy discussion in terms of whether or not a Ben Noach is prohibited, involved in this kind of what we will call an association of Shituf. Obviously, one of the most popular religions in the history of mankind seems to be operating with this model, but that doesn't have to be our discussion right now, although obviously that's where this discussion was headed towards. So anyway, so the Gemara points out, so how could there possibly be a tefillah in the Beis HaMikdash that sounds like it involves Shituf, it involves this kind of partnership? So So the Gemara is bothered. You are going ahead and attaching Shem Shemayim with something else. The Gemara says that such an individual who engages in these kinds of activities is going to be uprooted from the world. So the Gemara says, okay, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to go back to the Mishnah and explain the Mishnah again. But we're going to have to put in some commas. La Hashem anachnu modim. So we acknowledge HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning as far as all this is concerned, it's all done for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then ulechanu meshapchim. As far as the Mizbech is concerned, so we're praising the Mizbech. But in other words, but it's not association, it's not an attachment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to put in a hard comma, maybe even a semicolon. And the Gemara just simply repeats, La Hashem anachnu modim, ulechanu mekalsim. Okay, so the Gemara reinterpreted the line of the Mishnah, as the Mishnah over here is not Shituf, Chalila v'chas, it is certainly prohibited to do so, right? As close to Avodah Zarah as you can get, if not actual Avodah Zarah, so the Gemara just simply reinterprets what is meant in the Mishnah. Kemaaseh b'chol. Now, up to the next part of the Gemara over here is going to be focusing on the Shita of Yochanan ben Broka. As we pointed out in the Mishnah, Rav Yochanan ben Broka says that we're not doing this process with the Arava, but rather we're doing it with the Lulav. Now, it's really unclear in the Mishnah in terms of this position Rav Yochanan ben Broka? Meaning, if I'm not doing it with the Arava, am I doing anything with the Arava? Is Rav Yochanan ben Broka at all supporting this idea that there's a mitzvah ba'arava? And he doesn't hold that the halakha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai? So admittedly, that point is unclear. And although we're going to be covering the next number of lines of Gemara, I don't think we're going to get clarity on that particular point. But anyway, but certainly what we can say clearly is that according to Rav Yochanan ben Broka in the Mishnah, so you're not going to be using the Arava, but rather you're going to be using the Lulav. So how did he know to substitute? So Amar Rav Huna Maitamid Rav Yochanan ben Broka. So the Gemara is going to give a couple of explanations for Rav Yochanan ben Broka. Even though the halacha does not follow his position, but still, he is a Tana. His position is a tenable position. And so therefore, it's all chelik of Talmud Torah. So the Gemara wants to know, how did he arrive at his conclusion? So we know when the Torah describes the palm as the dalamin, it says kapos tamarim. Now, even though it is spelled without a vav, but it's pronounced as if there's a vav there. As a result of that, so it's Balashan Rabim. So that means to say that there are two. One is going to be for the Dalminim, and the other is going to be for this extra Lulav, for the mitzvah of Lulav Shel Mizbeach. V'Rabbanan, now the Chachamim, who clearly argue with the Shita of Rav Yochanan ben Broka. So Amri Kapos Ksiv. Yeah, the Pasuk says Kapos. We pronounce it Kapos, but the way it's written is without the Vav. And so, yes, this could be connected, tied to the question that we discussed already earlier in our Masechta. It's discussed at length in the beginning of Sanhedrin. Yesh'em le'mikra, yesh'em le'mesoris. But in the meantime, however, over here, our Gemara clearly cites that the Chachamim are of the position that since it writes it without a vav, so it's B'loshen Yachid, it's only a reference to the Dalminim. Rabbi Levi Omer, Rashi points out, Rabbi Levi is giving us a different understanding of Rav Yochanan ben Broka. Why, according to Rav Yochanan ben Broka, are we substituting the Arava with the Lulav? So, Katamar, because what we're doing over here is we're striking a metaphor. The Lulav that we're going to be using is a metaphor for the Jewish people. Ma Tamar zeh, ein lo ela lev echad. Just like the Tamar has one heart, you look at any palm tree, and you're going to notice that, obviously, with a palm tree, so it's got one trunk that goes straight up. So it is lev echad. There's only one heart of palm. So to the Jewish people are singularly focused and dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so the mashal over there encourages Rav Yochanan ben Broka to take out the Arava and substitute it with a lulav. Again, it's very difficult to understand over here. In other words, it's a lovely drasha, but just because of a drasha, so what is he doing? Is he uprooting the halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai because of this drasha? Obviously, that can't be what's going on. So it goes without saying that my understanding of the Gemara over here is at this point in time extraordinarily limited, but the Gemara has now given us two bases in terms of why Rav Yochanan ben Broka takes out the Arav and substitutes it with a Lulav. Either because if it's a Drasha Kapas Tamarim, or because it is a Svara of Katamar. It's a metaphor to the Tamar and the Jewish people. Tosos over here, you want to see it inside, we're not going to go through it. Second Tosos says that there might be a nafkamina, whether you're learning out through a drasha or you're learning out through the svara. See Tosos for a possible nafkamina. We'll stop here. Tomorrow we get on to an extraordinarily halacha maisa topic of discussion regarding bracha. How many brachas do we make on lulav? How many brachas do we make on sukkah? All coming up in tomorrow's daf. A quick recap of today's daf. We finished with the stories of Aibu. Three stories that were told by Aibu. We started today with the third story of Aibu, in which he came home, it was Erev Shabbos, he was the one who said that it was Usser. He quoted B'Shem Rav Elazar ben Rav Tzadok that a person should not be going home unannounced on Erev Shabbos, because what's going to end up happening is that a fight's going to happen. No food was prepared for the individual, he gets home, he's expecting food, it is his house, and meanwhile, not enough food was made, and it's going to lead to discord. And so in order to prevent the discord, so make sure that if you're coming home, people know that you are coming home. There's an expectation that you are in fact coming home. Question as to whether or not this is also true when you're going to a hotel, whether there's a similar concern as well. Two different girsos of the Gemara, two different versions of the Gemara. That was number one. Number two, we talked about where the lulavim were kept in the Azara in the event that the first day of Sukkot coincided with Shabbos. Then we started with the Mishnah. The Mishnah on Memham and Aleph goes through the mitzvah of Arava in somewhat more detail. Where exactly the Aravas were cut, from what location, happens to be that location was tax-free. It was a duty-free area. These arevos were really long. They would lean them on the side of the mizbeach, and actually the tips of them would go over the side of the mizbeach. They would blow on shofar, and then every day they would encircle the mizbeach one time, and on Hoshana Rabbah, they would encircle it seven times. What would they be saying as they were encircling the mizbeach? Two different versions of the Mishnah, according to the Tanakh, Ana Shem Hoshiana, Ana Shem Hoshiana. According to Rabbi Yehuda, Ani Vaho Hoshiana. As Rashi understands, Ani Vaho are Shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On the seventh day, it was a very special event, seventh day, they would go around not one time, like all the other days, but they would go around seven times. Tefillos were said at the end of Hoshana Rabbah, when they concluded what exactly the tefillos were. So the Gemara gave a couple of nuschos in terms of what the tefillah was. According to the Mishnah, there was really no difference between in the Beis HaMikdash and the Arava between a weekday and Shabbos. The only notable difference is that on Shabbos they would not be cutting the Aravos on Shabbos itself. They would do so before Shabbos, and they would simply put it in a gold tube in order to preserve its freshness for the next day. The Mishnah also then went on to report that according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, it was not a Ravos that they would be leaning on the Mizbech, but rather it was the Lulav. They'd be leaning on the Mizbech. And the Mishnah concluded with a couple of Minhagim, unusual Minhagim that were practiced on the day of Hoshana Rabbah, in terms of adults taking both the Lulav and the Srogan from children. The Gemara went over, number one, the idea that this area that they got the Aravos from were duty-free. Number two, the Gemara told us that in order to understand how the 11 Amma Arava is leaning over the top by one Amma, so it must be based on the configuration of the Mizbeach, that the bottom of the Aravas were not on the ground, but rather were situated on the Yesod. The Gemara gave three different interpretations of the Pasuk of Isru Chag Ba'avosim Ad Karnosim Mizbeach, the first one obviously relevant to our discussion of the Arava leaning on the Mizbeach. The Gemara went through two other explanations as well. Just as a parenthetical note, I didn't point this out when we went through the Daf, but the third interpretation is that you got to make sure to have food, right? Achila v'shtia an yantav. Rashi does offer an alternative pshat, and that is that it's not talking about an yantav itself. I don't need an extra drusha to teach me about eating and drinking an yantav, but rather it's talking about after yantav, the day after yantav. In fact, we give that day a name, we call it Isru Chag. So it happens to be based on an alternative understanding of Rashi within our Gemara. So the Gemara over here is not referencing actual Yontif itself, but the day after Yontif. What you and I colloquially describe as Isru Chag, and that really comes from that second shot within Rashi. Okay? I didn't mention it during the Daf, but during the review, it would be good. The Gemara quotes a number of statements made by the Rashbi that was said over by Rabbi Yirmiyah, that was said over by Chizkiah. Number one, that if you want to fulfill a mitzvah of something that is growing from the ground, you must be holding it in the direction in which it grew from the ground. This is true by Dal Minim, it's true by the setting up of the pillars of the Mishkan. The Gemara also noted a couple of other drushas that we learned out from the Pasuk as well, as from Atzei Shitim Omedim. Additionally, the Gemara quotes B'Shem Rashbi, that because he had so many zechuyos, so he, together with his son, together with the king Yosam, so their zechuyos are so abundant, they can operate and act and benefit Klal Yisrael altogether. The Gemara quotes also the Rashbi, that he and his son are B'nai Aliyah. In terms of he and his son being B'nai Aliyah, so what level are they at? So basically after having gone through the Gemara, they're operating on the highest level. And we pointed out that there were three different levels of B'nai Aliyah. The Rashbi, together with the son, are operating on the highest level. The Gemara wants to know that the tefillah, according to Rabbi Eliezer, Lashem Ulam Mizbeach, it sounds like a violation of Shituf, which can't possibly be, that the Mishnah would be endorsing a position of Shituf, to which the Gemara's response is, no, it's not. It is not. It has nothing to do with Shituf. You just simply have to know how to punctuate the sentence correctly, and the Gemara helped us punctuate that sentence. And finally, the Gemara went over the position of Rav Yochanan ben Broka. Rav Yochanan ben Broka says that we would not be leaning the Arava on the Mizbeach, but rather we'd be leaning a lulav on the Mizbeach. How do you arrive at that conclusion? The Gemara either learns it out through a drasha, kapos tamarim in the plural, or it's a svara. The Jewish people are like a tamar, just like a tamar has one lev echad, so too the Jewish people do as well, and that svara leads them to the conclusion that you should be doing a, you should be leaning not the arava, but rather the lulav. Ad kan.